And good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, the 11th of October. It's just about half a minute before the hour. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juno Afternoon. On today's show, we're going to be visiting with Cynthia Matomi, who is the owner of a new business here in town, Juno Quick Care. Also, Ed Bayarski will be here to talk about the upcoming Garlic Lovers Potluck. Terry Calvin, high school career counselor, will be here to talk about the upcoming college and career fair. And also, we're going to have a guest from the Red Cross who's off to help some of the victims of Hurricane Matthew. So stay tuned for a Juno Afternoon after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Celebrations were held in cities across the country Monday for Indigenous Peoples Day. A powwow highlighted the celebration in Lawrence, Kansas. The city first recognized the day last year. This year's recognition included declaring the first week in October in honor of the Tribal College, Haskell Indian Nations University. Obi Begay came out to the event in downtown Lawrence, says he appreciates the city's gesture.
It's definitely a step in the right direction, you know, and just like acknowledging, you know, the past and our history, and to quit acting like it's not, it never happened, you know. So it's cool that Lawrence acknowledged it and did something to step towards a better future, a more cooperative future.
Native people in cities across the U.S. are urging city leaders to replace the federal holiday set aside for Christopher Columbus and instead observe the day in honor of the contributions of Indigenous people. Brian Cladisby is president of the National Congress of American Indians.
Columbus Day is a holiday that definitely has outlived its usefulness. If people truly understood the history of Christopher Columbus and what he did to the original inhabitants that lived here when he first got here, they might have a different opinion, but the textbooks do not teach exactly what his crimes were in the I'm not sure about states yet, but definitely cities that are getting rid of Columbus Day and making it an Indigenous Day celebrations. I think the wave will just continue to get bigger, and at some point here in the near future, we hope that the federal government will make the decision to change Columbus Day to Indigenous Day.
Cladisby made the comments in Phoenix, Arizona, on the eve of the city's first official celebration of Indigenous Peoples Day. The city this week is hosting hundreds of tribal leaders from across the country who are taking part in the National Congress of American Indians' 73rd Annual Convention. People taking part in celebrations in some cities use the day to raise awareness of the Dakota Access Pipeline and the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's opposition to the project. The tribe is urging supporters for peaceful demonstrations after a court Sunday rejected the tribe's request to halt construction. More than two dozen arrests were made at a site in North Dakota Monday. Law enforcement officials say those arrested face charges related to rioting and criminal trespass. Meanwhile, supporters of the tribe continue to camp out near the Standing Rock Reservation. Tribes continue to send support. Over the weekend, the Confederated Tribes of the Colville delivered smoked salmon and firewood. Emily Schwing reports.
Michael Marchand is the chairman of the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation. He says tribal leadership asked three women from the reservation to deliver 500 salmon they smoked by hand to North Dakota. He says tribal members from across the region are shuttling back and forth.
A lot of the Colville tribal members and Indians from surrounding tribes like the Yakimas and Spokanes and other tribes in the Northwest doing what they can to make a presence and help support the protest.
With help from the Kalispell tribe, the Colvilles also sent firewood for sweat lodges, cook shacks, and to keep demonstrators warm as cold weather settles in. Washington's Lummi tribe also donated salmon. The Yakima Nation sent a truckload of fruit and vegetables last month. I'm Emily Schwing reporting.
The U.S. Departments of the Interior, Justice, and Army Corps of Engineers are hosting a listening session tonight in Phoenix, Arizona, at the National Congress of American Indians Convention. Tribal leaders are invited to share views on future infrastructure projects nationwide. The session is expected to include the Obama administration's response to issues raised by the Dakota Access Pipeline project. A press release issued by the three agencies Monday states the Army Corps continues to review issues raised by the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and other tribal nations and hopes to conclude its ongoing review soon on the pipeline. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by the University of Tulsa College of Law's online Indian Law Master's Degree Program to help you work effectively in Indian Country. Spring application deadline is December 1st. More information at 844-573-3934.
Native Voice 1.
It is a little after 5 minutes after the hour this Tuesday, the 11th of October, Yom Kippur, so happy Day of Atonement, which begins at sundown. Our first guest today on Juno Afternoon is Cynthia Matomi, and she is relatively new to Juno, and she has a new business called Juno Quick Care. We were just talking a little bit before we came on the air about how it's a return to the days when doctors did house calls and other medical providers. And I was explaining that being the son of two doctors, I certainly remember when they would leave the house to go take care of people when I was a little boy. But in this day and age, you pretty much have to go to the doctor's office or, heaven forfend, the ER. And so, Cynthia, welcome to Juno and welcome to a Juno Afternoon.
Thank you very much.
So tell us a little bit about your business model here and what brought you to do this kind of medical care.
Well, you know, the business model is bringing back the old-fashioned house call and increasing patients and the community members' access to services. There are those that can't get out of the house or are too sick, or maybe the offices are closed with their normal primary care provider, or even that last-minute sports physical, oh gosh, I have to have this done for tomorrow. You call Juno Quick Care, and I will pack everything up, the old black medical bag with my computer, and you'll have a professional evaluation and prescriptions if needed, and with the patient's consent, of course, a copy to their normal primary care provider.
And what is your professional and educational background?
So I am a board-certified family nurse practitioner. I have been a registered nurse for 20 years. Prior to that, I was a combat medic in the United States Navy with a pharmaceutical background.
And, of course, that's probably some of the ultimate house call visiting when you're deployed in a combat theater. Obviously, patients can't come to you most of the time. You have to go to them.
Correct. And, in fact, the Navy's hospital corpsmen are the medics out in the field for the Marine Corps.
Excellent. And so how long have you been here in Juno?
I have been in Juno 1 year.
All right. And how long has Juno Quick Care been operating?
Juno Quick Care started a few months ago, slowly with sports physical time, and now just getting a nice firm base, and wanted to spread the word out to let the community members know that there's an alternative, especially prior to the fall and winter season coming up.
Excellent. But as we were discussing a little bit before we went on the air, sometimes there are impediments to going to the doctor's office. Whether you are a parent, a single parent with multiple kids, it's kind of hard to juggle them all and the one that needs the medical care. And then certainly once we do get some snow and ice on the ground, people may be a little hesitant to go rushing off to the doctor if they're fragile and they're really concerned about their ability to get there and back safely. So you can meet both those needs, I think.
Absolutely. And the fall season comes the biometric testing, where if you have an insurance plan that can offer you discounts if you get your cholesterol, your BMI, your body mass index. I can do that right at your home. I have the testing equipment and license to do that, and we can hopefully get you some money saved off of your insurance premium as well.
If listeners are interested in learning more about Juno Quick Care, how would be the best way for them to go about doing that?
You can call us at 907-419-0544. We also have a Facebook webpage, Juno Quick Care, and we also have a website as well, junoquickcare.com.
And you also actually have a physical office location.
I do. That started about a month ago, and I have a physical location at the Juneau Family Medicine Center, Birth Center, right on Salmon Creek.
All right, that's kind of up there at the head of the valley, next to Valley Medical, overlooking the hospital and all the other buildings out there.
Correct, and it has a beautiful waterfall behind the building, which is a nice area to sit and relax for lunch.
No, it definitely, there's something appropriate about our hospital and a lot of the doctor's offices, medical offices being located out there, because it is a very special place.
It is. The karma in that center is just amazing, and with the services that the birth center offers, it is very complimentary to have a medical house call place within the center itself, because the Wind Vibes do house calls as well.
And the birth center is actually a nonprofit.
That is correct.
And so it operates on some of the revenues it brings in, but also it does some fundraising in the community to continue to be able to provide the services it provides.
That is correct. And in fact, they have a fundraiser coming up on August 26th at SALT. And we're encouraging to have community members get their tickets early. They're $100, and you get your choice of a paleo-friendly filet mignon, a vegetable Wellington, and the wonderful halibut. Also, there's going to be a dessert auction and a seven-day vacation auction where that winner can get their choice of locations. And all of the money raised goes towards their discounted health care fund.
So they can help people who don't have insurance or otherwise might not be able to pay for services actually get those services.
Correct.
And you said the date was the 26th.
That is correct.
And so that's Wednesday, 2 weeks from tomorrow, I think.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Well, Cynthia Matomi, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners on a Juneau afternoon?
Well, you know, it is a wonderful community. I'm very happy to be providing this service to such a great community that's been so welcoming to me and my children, and I'm really looking forward to keeping this community happy and healthy, visitors and citizens alike, because I will see you in your house, your boat, your hotel, your office, or you can come see me in the office as well.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks again, Cynthia Matomi from Juneau Quick Care. Welcome to Juneau, and best wishes for success in your new endeavor.
Thank you so much.
Ook fit de Westside Daisy, eh? Went cross town and joined by MCA. Soon bacon and pork he began to enjoy. Took off his yarmulke, it was a guy. I said, hey, uncle, take a walk on the kosher side. I said, hey, Nudnik, take a walk down Fairfax. And the members of Adasago. I should have shocked many heard the news. He couldn't believe that he and Jesus were both Jews. He said, how can we be the same? Bendis long hairs, got a Mexican name. I said, hey, Hirsch, take a walk on the kosher side. I said, hey, kid, take a walk down Fairfax. Why, Brock, follow to meet a nice girl. What do you need a shiksa for? They're dirty, they're filthy. Meet a pure one, a clean one, a pure one. Hey, Bob, it's one of the stars in picture shows. So he straightened his hair, kept his teeth, and fixed his nose. Changed his name to Lash LaRue, then talked of the pride of being a Jew. I said, hey, Abe, take a walk on the kosher side. I said, hey, whatever your name is, take a walk down Fairfax. start to... Yeah, give me a forward there, will you? Go in the corner there. Get me a Danish chair. I'm sick. I can't walk up there by myself. Give me a cup of coffee. Little Katz was taking his bar mitzvah lesson. Cross the street, a shiksha was undressing. And one day, to the rabbi's surprise, Katz was shown the way he was circumcised. I said, hey, Katzie, take a walk on the kosher side. I said, hey, Nudnik, take a walk down Fairfax. And the members of us have to go. A girl, a thing like that, boy. You know what's going to happen? Your mother finds out about a thing like that. You'll make a heartbreak there. Don't you care what you do? You filthy animal. Why don't you get upstairs, study, become a doctor or something? Yeah, good animal. I'm fed up with you. These kids, they're making me sick. They're animals. They're no good. Business isn't good. I gotta stop already. I'm retired. I moved to San Diego. I get away from it already. What am I doing here with a studio with a bunch of kids? Fine. You love singing already? This it? Let me out of here, Eddie. I gotta go get a sandwich or something. I can't take this anymore.
And it is about 15 minutes after the hour. That song we just listened to is Take a Walk on the Kosher Side by Gefilte Joe and the Fish. And I want to give Jeff Brown 110% of the credit for selecting that lovely track this afternoon. Our next guest here on a Juno afternoon is Ed Bajarski, Master Gardener. And he's here to talk about a very serious but I think delicious event that's coming up, the Garlic Lovers Potluck. So welcome to a Juno afternoon, Ed.
Thank you, Ben.
And what can we look forward to? This is the third annual Garlic Lovers Potluck.
That's right, and it is sponsored by the Juno Garden Club, so it has been happening. I hope it's growing. It was better last year. We hope it'll be better this year also. And this event has three of us, David Love, Joe Orsi, and I will be doing a very open presentation on growing, harvesting, storing, and using garlic, varieties of garlic fertilizer, how to grow this stuff. And then along with that, we'll have some raw garlic to taste, plus some interesting little tidbits of stuff for tasting to go along with. Hopefully everybody else will bring interesting, tasty garlic dishes to share. It is a potluck. It is free. That's important, too. And it starts at 4:30 at the Canvas on Seward Street.
And it goes until 7:30.
It does. So I'm assuming people will probably come and go, as is normal around here. Again, with this nice weather, it's hard to come inside on this during this beautiful weather we've been having. Unbelievable weather. So
it has been just as nice and sunny as it could possibly be in a Juneau October.
It's great not to be out there gardening, digging potatoes, planting garlic, and not having to wear my rubber suit all day long. So it's been a treat.
And so it's a potluck event, and people are, of course, invited to bring a garlic dish or a recipe. But it's also kind of like a summit or a seminar, because you're going to be providing some hands-on educational opportunities.
We will, exactly. And we will even have, so those of us who have been growing garlic for quite a few years, we'll talk about our experience, what works, what doesn't work, suggesting varieties that folks should be growing. Generally, hardneck garlics grow the best here, do well, taste better, much better, just like everything else, better than the store-bought stuff out of California. And again, you'll get a chance to taste some of the raw garlic, which ranges, depends on your tolerance, of course, but and people have different tastes, but from quite mild to very hot. And then we should have things like pestos and spreads. I know we've had soups and fish and, of course, Italian-style pasta with garlic sauces. And we'll talk also about, a little bit about and suggest what kind of wines that might go with this, or perhaps beer and other adult beverages, too.
Excellent. Now, how many folks would you say in Juneau, not that you know, but just guessing, how many garlic growers are there here in the capital city?
Oh, what a guess. I mean, I know I've sold a lot of garlic to folks, as have my compatriots here. Certainly, there's hundreds of folks growing it. Lots and lots. If you go out to the community garden in the summertime, or in any the main community garden out on Montana Creek Road, there's a couple of them over in Douglas also. and certainly lots of home gardens. So as people grow a little bit of garlic and find out how good it is and how well it grows, most of them, including me, want to grow more and eat more, and it's in our everyday diet.
And it's very, very good for you. I can tell you that my mother, being the physician that she is really, really into antioxidants. I remember one morning I was surprised when she made pancakes for breakfast and there was garlic in them. And it would have been one thing if I'd known, but I wasn't expecting the garlic in the pancakes. So it was a bit of a surprise.
I haven't done, we make our own sausages from our local wild game, and garlic is usually featured prominently, and breakfast sausage definitely needs garlic, as well as the bratwurst and the Polish and the Italian and other assorted sausages that we make. So that would come, I don't know about in pancakes necessarily, but I just was at the Minnesota Garlic Festival in August. And there were, we did have several different kinds of garlic ice cream, which were quite tasty. One was a garlic, tomato, and basil ice cream. All of the dishes, and of course, you've got to have garlic if you're making pickles. And a lot of folks do pickling around here, too. So it's a great plant to grow, to eat, to enjoy. And, yeah, like you say, it's good for us.
And so you actually brought in a piece of garlic, which was very kind of you. Is this the long neck variety?
No, it's called hard neck.
Hard
neck garlic is different, generally different than the soft neck, that which is grown mostly in California. The soft neck, you have probably seen garlic braids because it is soft. With hard necks, send up a center stem in the early summer on eventually what comes out of the center of the garlic plant with a scape that has little bulbils on top. They don't have flowers anymore. Garlic does not flower. But these bulbils are potentially seed for new garlic. We normally take them off as soon as they show up and use that. We stir fry them, chop them up, make a green garlic pesto and other stuff with those. So it's a little added bonus. But with these hard stems, these hard stem, hard neck garlic tends to be better adapted to cooler climates.
Okay.
It has fewer but larger cloves mm-hmm. in each bulb. And outstanding flavor.
Well, and so, yeah, this is actually kind of a smaller little bulb at the bottom, but each of the cloves inside of it looks like a nice size. But then it's a good 6 or 7 inch long hard neck stem coming
the
out.
The stem, well, yeah, the stems, yeah, the stem that you see in front of you is not necessarily representative. The plants themselves can get to be anywhere from 3 to 6 feet tall with this, the full stem in by mid-July or so. So I leave the stem on there for it, and they're convenient handles.
And it's fun, and as I promised you earlier before we came on the air, this will be reverently prepared and fondly eaten at a certain place in Park Shore this evening.
And, of course, the important thing is that you and your partner eat similar quantities of garlic. You know, so, I mean, I will be bringing a lot of parsley with me, too, and parsley is a good breath freshener.
Absolutely.
To go with garlic when you're eating it. But again, you know, you're eating it to repel vampires and other evil spirits, and there's some people, if they don't like garlic, well, maybe they're folks you shouldn't be hanging around with.
And I was going to ask you, since we're just a couple of weeks out from Halloween and All Souls Day, do you get a lot of vampires at the Garlic Lovers Potluck in the past couple of years?
Rarely.
Okay.
Very rare. Yeah. not so much.
Right. Well, you know, maybe they could sneak in, but I guess even if they're in disguise, they can't get near it. The garlic keeps
them away. I would think
away.
They would need some special masks, you know, the real heavy-duty masks to filter out the whatever that is the effective factor here.
So a little bit about the Juneau Garden Club, the host of this year's third annual Garlic Lovers Potluck. It's a community organization. If people want to learn more about the Garden Club, where might they
do so? They do have a Facebook page. I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able, I can't give you their website right offhand. Come show up, and you can certainly join. It's pretty easy to join. There's fairly small dues. They do participate in events around town, which includes doing scholarships and helping with various other nonprofit projects. I know they're hoping to work with the Aware Shelter on some garden projects, among others. And certainly they, along with the Master Gardeners, have done a lot of work in Juneau working with local people, helping them grow their own food more effectively, you know, because homegrown food is going to be better, fresher, tastier than the stuff that comes in by barge that takes a week or two to get here.
Absolutely. So it's a matter of health, food security, and it's also just good for the soul to grow your own food. You know,
it really is. It's education. You know, that's what we're trying to do. Certainly we want to work with kids as well as adults, and the more we can learn, and certainly flowers as well as vegetables, some of which are edible too. So all of that really helps in this climate.
Absolutely. Well, Ed Bajarski, thank you so much for coming on a Juneau Afternoon. It's the third annual Garlic Lovers Potluck and Summit. It's at the Canvas this Saturday, the 15th of October, from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. Any final garlicky words of wisdom for our listeners?
Life without garlic is tasteless.
All right. Thank you, Ed, and I hope you have a great turnout this weekend.
There are spices and vegetables that you can grow. Some are under the ground, some grow tall. Though they all have their qualities, this you must know, that the garlic is best of them all. The Egyptians, Phoenicians, the Vikings, the Greeks, Babylonians, Danes, and Chinese on their voyages took enough garlic for weeks, and their enemies died on the breeze. Since biblical times, in all parts of the earth, it has cured countless sufferings and ills. Oh, if we understood what the garlic is worth, we would throw out our poisonous pills. Bulgaria's mountains and Russia's white plains, people live to 100 years old. For it's juice of the garlic that runs in their veins, oh, it's worth twice its weight in pure gold. With selenium, germanium, allicin too, it can fight off all types of disease. So if you've got arthritis, TB, or the flu, just say, peel me a garlic clove, please. Plant some cloves in your garden to keep away worms and the other bad things that kill plants. If you're one of those people concerned about germs, you can drop one or two in your pants. There are spices and vegetables that you can grow. Some are under the ground, some grow tall. Though they all have their qualities, this you must know, that the garlic is best of them all. Oh, the garlic is best of them all. Yes, the garlic is best of them all.
Do you or someone you care for live with chronic pain or chronic disease like high blood pressure, diabetes, or heart disease? You can learn to manage the symptoms, understand the disease, and communicate more easily with providers. Find a list of Living Well classes offered around the state at livingwell.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services and the American Diabetes Association. Aired by the Alaska Broadcasters Association and this station.
The Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, October the 11th, 2016. It's the 90th birthday of the Buddhist monk and writer Thich Nhat Hanh, born in Quang Ngai, Vietnam, 1926, author of more than 100 books, including The Miracle of Mindfulness. It's the birthday of Mason Weems, born in Maryland, 1759, who invented from whole cloth the famous story about George Washington cutting down his father's cherry tree with a hatchet and then being unable to lie about it. It was on this day, 1962, Pope John XXIII convened the first session of the Second Vatican Council, out of which came new church policies. The Roman Catholic Church would now allow Mass to be celebrated in languages other than Latin, and priests now faced the congregation, not the altar, and they set aside some of their ornate regalia, dressing more simply. Some liturgical music was updated to a more contemporary style, and now Catholics were allowed to visit other churches. They could attend weddings and bar mitzvahs and funerals of their non-Catholic friends and neighbors. It's the birthday of the novelist Elmore Leonard, born New Orleans, 1925, wrote some pulp westerns, then started writing crime fiction, more than 40 books in all, such as Get Shorty, Be Cool, and Rum Punch. He had 10 rules about writing, things like never open a book with weather, and never use a verb other than said to mean dialogue. Avoid detailed descriptions of characters. Try to leave out the parts that readers tend to skip. And he said, my most important rule is, if it sounds like writing, I rewrite it. When he was asked why he writes about criminals instead of ordinary people, Elmore Leonard said, I just feel more secure in a situation where I know a gun can go off at any time if things get boring. And also, all villains have mothers. Here's a poem for today by Faith Sheeran, Servants. In college, I read about Virginia Woolf and Edith Wharton, and I thought of their great minds and their long dresses and their gilded friendships, which involved tea in the library or on the lawn. I thought of the places they traveled and the weight of their trunks and all the ways their marriages did or did not please them. I thought of the dogs that followed at their heels and the rooms and gardens they decorated and the beaches where they carried umbrellas. But I never once thought of their servants. I didn't think of the cook who woke up to make the fires of morning, or the maids who stood over a pot of hot soap, stirring the day. I did not think of how someone dressed them and scrubbed their floors, how someone brought their dinner on a tray. It was years before I knew they had them at all, invisible, unremembered people who gave their lives to drudgery. Now I can barely write or finish a book for all the housework and errands. Now I think of them knocking dust from the curtains, carrying the rugs outside each spring so they could beat them with a broom. Servants, a poem by Faith Sheeran from Telling the Bees, published by Stephen F. Austin State University Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity, brain training with over 50 challenging games from scientists and game designers exploring new ways to research human cognition. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 33 minutes after the hour. Today's Tuesday, the 11th of October. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juno afternoon. Before Garrison Keillor and the Writer's Radio Almanac and the PSA, we heard the Garlic Waltz. I just wanted to make sure any listeners who were delighted with that song knew that it was performed by Claudia Schmidt and Sally Rogers on their album Where While We Live. And Ed Bajarski couldn't resist letting me play it after we talked about garlic. But we're not talking about garlic anymore. We're talking about careers and what people do once they graduate from high school. And they either go to college or another school, or they do something else productive, learning a skill or a trade. And Terry Calvin, who's the career advisor for the Juneau School District, is here to talk about those things generally and specifically an upcoming college and career fair. So welcome to a Juneau afternoon, Terry.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And this career fair is going to be upon us in just a couple days.
That's correct. It's Friday. It's this Friday. We'll be hosting it this year at JDHS, Juno Douglas High School's main gym. We rotate every year. 1 year it's at Thunder, and the next it's at JD, but this year it is at Juno Douglas High School.
And this is an event that is for students at either school or even from Yaskook, but anywhere in the district who want to learn more about the career or college opportunities that are available to them.
That is correct. We actually, since it's being hosted at JDHS this year, we'll be busing our students from Thunder Mountain downtown to JDHS to be able to go through the college fair. And our counterparts at Yaskook will actually walk over and participate as well. We've got Homebridge students coming. So it's good for any student. We have certain hours that we are open. We have the Thunder Mountain students coming in from 9:30 to 11, and then the JDHS students will be there from 12:50 to 2:45. But then we have a special public opening for anybody who wants to come between 4:30 and 5:30. Parents and the public can come anytime that we're open, but I do encourage them the 4:30 to 5:30. There's a few less kids there, so it's a little easier to talk to some of the reps.
Now, if parents were interested in going when their sons and daughters were there, would it be all right for those parents of the students to come during the Thunder Mountain window or the JDHS window?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We would never turn a parent away, especially if they're going to be there with their student to have that conversation. It's a little easier to have the conversations at 4:30, but we would absolutely invite them to come.
All right. So what can the young people and their parents who come to the College and Career Fair expect to find?
Well, right now we have 65 reps coming from all over. So we have colleges, we have trade schools, we have the military, we have some of the military academies, apprenticeships. Job Service is going to be there, as well as Job Corps. So quite a wide variety of representation.
And back when, a long time ago, I was graduating from high school, it was pretty much called a college fair, not a college and career fair. And the emphasis really was on, if you're going to graduate, you're going to go on to school somewhere. But that one-size-fits-all approach is no longer done, because young people can go a whole bunch of different paths when they're graduating from high school.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of other options out there, and we don't want students to leave high school without a plan. So we want to give them opportunities, whether it is, again, the trades, the military, or actually just going into the workforce. We want to make sure that we've given them all those opportunities and choices to have in front of them.
Who are some of the newer or first-time presenters or representatives at the College and Career Fair this year?
We actually have New York University coming, which is a very first for us, which is very cool. We've got the IBEW, which is the Electrical Union, which is their first time. Job Corps has come off and on, but it'll be really nice to have them on campus with us this year to have some conversations. And then, of course, there's always your usuals that we like to see, you know, Western Washington, Linfield College, Oregon Coast Culinary Institute, which they come in with their counterpart, which is another community college, and gives those opportunities for students who are interested in going to the culinary arts.
And obviously that is a growth area. We've got some exciting restaurants that have opened in recent years here in Juneau, and some of the chefs are local young men and women who've become the star chefs at those restaurants.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what other things does your office, Career Advising, help young people do in addition to giving them access to possible schools or vocational academies or the military, you know, places they can go? But are there some other sort of preparatory activities that help across the board in that stage in life?
Sure. One of the things I do want to kind of sneak in here on you is we've got College Go Alaska coming up. As some of you may know, that the FAFSA is typically done January 1st of the year for financial aid. This year they've bumped it up to October 1st. So that actually opened up October 1st this year. So we're going to be doing a College Go Alaska, which is the 25th of October, and it will be held out at Thunder Mountain High School at 5:30. And this is an opportunity for families to come in and sit down and actually fill out the FAFSA if they're having troubles doing it on their own. One of the perks about doing it earlier, and this is a terminology that kind of throws us, is you use prior year taxes. So what that means is for this year, the students are going to upload, and the parents, their taxes from 2015 into the FAFSA. The perk about that is you've already done them. They're done. They should be, if you file electronically with the IRS, you go in and click a few buttons, they grab it from the IRS and upload it, which is fantastic. But we realize that it can be a struggle for some families, and so we want to be able to be there to help them go through this process. So again, that's going to be out at Thunder Mountain at 5:30 on October 25th to help people get that filled out if they still need help.
And that would be a lifetime thing. There'll be actual computers there where they could actually be filing the form with your guidance right there.
Absolutely. Yep.
And then it's done. Once it's done, it's done. They can worry about where they might want to go and what they might want to use the financial aid that they might be entitled to fulfill their goals.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
What other aspects of planning for post-high school life do you find yourself involved in with young people?
So a lot of it is just trying to help them know what, you know, get plans for what's happening next. Some of the students at this stage as juniors are just starting to explore. So we talk about the things that they want to be exploring, what they want to be looking at. Working on things like their resumes. You're going to need a resume whether you go to a university, whether you go to the union. They ask for resumes if you want to go into the workforce. So I help them work on their resumes, any applications, make contacts, help them make contacts with apprenticeships if that's something that they're interested in doing. For folks wanting to go into the military academies, they actually need to start their junior year, that process. So waiting until their senior year is too late. And so hopefully we're getting that information out to the students that right now, as juniors, they should be thinking about what's coming next so they can start moving forward with that.
In the United States, there's a pretty strong ethic that it's good to do something right away when you graduate from high school. In Britain, particularly, the gap year is a phenomenon. And there, it's really kind of encouraged for young people to take a year off after they graduate from secondary school. Does that trend something that you see gaining any traction here in our community or anywhere else in the United States?
I would say it's not a trend that's gaining momentum here. New Zealand is the same way. They do the same thing. They suggest that the students take a gap semester or a gap year just to kind of grow and mature and learn a little bit more about what they want to do. We do have students doing that. And my advice to students, if they're going to take a gap year, have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Don't plan to just kind of hang out and be with your buddies. Make it a useful year. Make it a growth year. So we don't see it still as much as in common as you would, say, like you had said, in Europe and in New Zealand. And I think sometimes it's a hard sell for parents.
Well,
I think parents typically think you graduate from high school and you go right on. And that's becoming more acceptable. And so we are starting to see a little more of that happening than back, say, 10 years ago.
Yeah, but obviously if your gap year was like, I'm going to get really good at these video games and ski every day, you can see why parents might think that wasn't a real solid plan. Not that there's anything wrong with skiing every day. I mean, if I could, I would. But I can see the parental wisdom in that. But, of course, I think in Europe a lot of times, and in New Zealand as well, no doubt, the gap year is seen as an opportunity to travel and to go someplace physically around the world where you haven't been and just open your eyes. And, of course, that can't be easily afforded by everyone. There's not financial aid for that sort of a thing. And in this day and age, some people are concerned about going halfway around the world because you don't know what you're going to find there. But I just wanted to raise that point because it is one option for young people when they're thinking about what they want to do.
Absolutely. And I don't think that's a wrong option. I think that's a great for some students, that's huge. There's some growth that happens by being independent, moving on, and doing some traveling and learning other cultures and learning to interact with other people and be independent.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely. Again, I agree with you. You don't want to stay home and do video games and ski, although that would also be one of my choices. But moving forward and growing, one of the things I do suggest to students who are looking at gap year is their senior year move forward as if they are going to go right on to an institute, if that's what they choose to do, because then they can grab hold of the support that we offer them, and then they can take a deferment for a year. And that way everything is done and in place for the following year. Whether they decide to stay with that institute or not is totally up to them, but they at least have the resources as a senior to be able to do that, and then still go out and do their gap year and have everything in place.
And almost every college and university is going to accept a request for a year deferred matriculation if you've got some tangible plan, which is I'm there, but I want to go do this other thing, and I will see you in a year when I'm a little more world experienced.
Absolutely. Yep.
So if people, listeners, students and parents right now want to learn a little bit more about what is going to be on offer on Friday, is there someplace on the web that they can go, or should they contact you directly?
They'd be welcome to contact me directly. For the rest of the week, I will be at JDHS. My email there is terry.calvin@junoschools.org. Or they can contact me at 523-1606, and I can give you a list of schools that will be represented and other entities that will be there if you'd like. Would love to see parents come and join their students, absolutely. Again, 4:30 to 5:30 is a fantastic time to come and talk with the reps.
And that's this Friday, the 14th of October, at Juno Douglas High School. It's the College and Career Fair put on by the Juno School District. Well, Terry Calvin, thank you so much for coming on a Juno Afternoon. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think that's it for now.
Okay, well, I hope you have a great turnout, and to all the young people listening, make those plans, and you'll be glad that you did. And that was the average white band, the best of the average white band, picking up the pieces and work to do. Our final guest today on a Juneau afternoon, this Tuesday, the 11th of October, is Andrew Bogar, who's here from the Red Cross. And we're talking about an emergent situation, which is Hurricane Matthew, which, as you have no doubt heard, has claimed hundreds of lives in Haiti and wreaked a great deal of havoc in Florida and in Georgia and South Carolina, and it is now visiting itself upon North Carolina. So, Andrew, welcome to a Juneau afternoon.
Thank you very much.
And let's talk a little bit about what you are currently involved in doing to try to help respond to this catastrophe on the other side of our nation.
So I'm actually glad to have a couple minutes to talk to you before I leave. I'm actually getting ready to deploy here at about 8 o'clock tonight, but before me, we've sent about 9 other volunteers. So the difference is I'm paid staff, so I've got great volunteers to man the office here, but we've sent 9 throughout Alaska to go support operations all up and down the southeast and the affected states. And so I'll be leaving tonight and looking forward to it.
Well, we are fortunate, and certainly the Americans in those parts of the country are fortunate that those 9 volunteers have already preceded you and that you're on your way there as well. What will be done here in your absence that might allow Juneau residents to participate in responding to this natural disaster?
Well, I would suggest individuals check out our webpage, redcross@alaska.org. Go ahead, and I find it easier just to go ahead and Google Red Cross of Alaska, and it'll take you right to our homepage, and there's guidance on how to contribute if you'd like. Honestly, as a disaster specialist, my job's to retain volunteers, and get them ready to respond. So check out the website. They're going to have information on how like to donate or how to update yourself and where to locate your family if you're concerned about your loved ones back on the East Coast.
Well, so obviously monetary contributions are always helpful.
Yes, sir.
Resources always help the Red Cross do the work that it's done. So did you have a role in training some of those or all those 9 volunteers who have gone ahead? And what kind of specific training did you offer to those people to help them be able to meaningfully support others when they get there?
So a lot of the training that we do actually right now is really facilitated online. So really anybody who has access to the internet can start the process to become a Red Cross volunteer. We always need more. We train our volunteers. Our disaster training is always free. And we train them to help people in shelters, help people with food distribution, called bulk distribution, to drive our emergency response vehicles. And then once you've gotten your basic training out of the way, and that's really done online, then you can attend classes and learn how to drive the emergency response vehicles that we have. You can learn how to run a shelter. You can learn how to sit down with somebody and actually talk about the things that they've lost and the things that they need to recover. And we call that casework. And we treat the individuals who've been affected by disasters clients. And mm-hmm. So there's a background check a volunteer would have to go through. And again, refer back to the webpage, and how to volunteer is right there. We've made it really simple.
About how long does that take? If someone listening right now had never been a volunteer before and just felt the call, when would he or she be in a position to be able to deploy?
It takes about a week to get online. Again, a lot of it's self-paced, so it's really up to the potential volunteer. One of the longest things is the background check. If someone's experienced a disaster, they're considered part of an at-risk or vulnerable population, and we have a responsibility to our clients to make sure that the volunteers we're sending, you know, are the best potential people we could find. So we do have a background check, and that takes about 3 or 4 days, and it's not intrusive. It's just making sure we do right by our clients, and then it's as fast as you can get the training done. We do ask the individuals actually make contact with staff members and talk to us, and we sit down and do a quick interview. We just want to make sure that the job that you're interested in doing for the Red Cross is best for your personality and that you really know what you're getting into.
Yeah, to have someone show up in a disaster zone and then decide, yeah, I'm really not comfortable being here, obviously is not the best use of resources, and it could actually cause more problems than it helps to solve.
Right, and the nice thing about the Red Cross is it's really hard for me to pick, okay, we have this job and we have that job, because if you think of any business, you think of any corporation, and there is a role for everybody. I have one volunteer who she's already identified that, look, going to a disaster and being stuck in the midst of that chaos, I don't have the personality for that. But if you stick me behind a computer on an Excel spreadsheet and just run numbers, and we're training her up to do our fiscal evaluations and making sure that we are responsible with the money that we're spending in the midst of a disaster. And so there's roles for everybody. And we have logistics roles where it just comes to, you know, moving the supplies from one place to another and making sure it gets out the door into the field. So really, and it's sitting down with a staff member or a senior volunteer and saying, hey, this is what my interest is, and this is how I'd like to help, and we'll match you up the right job.
At this point, what is the Red Cross expecting in terms of, and I know you can't predict a hurricane, but I guess everyone's hoping, obviously, this is the last landfall going up the East Coast. It's not going to strike anywhere farther north than North Carolina. But even if that best-case scenario comes to pass, there's still thousands and thousands of people who are displaced. Quite a few people are missing. The death toll hasn't risen that high, but there's just a great deal of impact still from this hurricane.
At last check, I know there's about 74,000 people still staying in American Red Cross shelters up and down the East Coast. We served about 137,000 meals to individuals who've been displaced or accepting Red Cross services. So we're going to be there for quite a long time. And the thing to remember is, as far as our response, it doesn't matter where the disaster goes. It doesn't matter where it happens. Almost everywhere we have Red Cross volunteers. And those local volunteers, they're going to be holding the bag for this for a while. But they're always going to be supported by a larger organization. So had this disaster happened here, like a 64 earthquake, all the volunteers that are racing towards the East Coast, you know, we would just turn that on its head and we would send volunteers here. And I love the fact that we're supported by a very large family of Red Crossers.
Excellent. And so, again, it's obviously possible just to go to the regular Red Cross website and make a donation. Are there any specific fundraising activities targeted towards Hurricane Matthew response that you're aware of at this time? And it may be too soon.
Right now, I would suggest check the website. We'll update that as we go along, especially as the needs better identified. I know a lot of people ask, look, I've got blankets and I've got teddy bears and I've got water. And what we end up finding is just the bulk physical items sometimes are really difficult to get from Alaska to anywhere else, and there's a cost associated with that. And while it's wonderful that you're sending blankets and clothing, we have no idea what the sizes of the people are that would be receiving these things, and that's why we always kind of go back to financial donations, because that gives the client the choice of how they want to use those resources in their own recovery. But checking the website is probably the best way to get guidance on that.
All right. And again, the best way to get to the website is just Google Red Cross of Alaska, and that'll take you to the main webpage.
Mm-hmm.
And all these other resources will be easily accessible there.
Yes, everything's right there. And they can always call me at 907-347-5841. And that'll get a hold of me, and I'll give them further. Anybody who has questions, I'll give them further guidance.
Excellent. Well, Andrew Bogar, thank you so much for taking time out of what is no doubt a busy day as you prepare to deploy. And best wishes for a safe and productive and helpful trip to America's Southeast, and we will see you back in Juneau upon your return.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Yep.
This is BirdNet. Among the most evocative sounds of early autumn are the voices of migratory geese flying high overhead in V formation. The migrating Canada geese heard here are returning from nesting in Canada and Alaska. But what about that V formation, angling outward like a ship's wake through the sky? This phenomenon, a kind of synchronized aerial tailgating, marks the flight of flocks of larger birds, like geese or pelicans, but isn't seen in smaller birds like robins or sandpipers. Most observers believe there's a straightforward reason for flying in a V. Each bird behind the leader is taking advantage of the lift of a corkscrew of air coming off the wingtips of the bird in front. This corkscrew updraft is called a tip vortex. Such efficiency enables the geese to save considerable energy during long flights. The V formation may also enhance birds' ability to see and hear each other, thus avoiding mid-air collisions. So migrating birds that do form V formations combine the benefits of aerial updrafts and communication. Small birds probably do not create enough of an updraft to help others in the flock and don't fly in V formation. Learn more about the aerodynamics of flight on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
On Thursday, October 13th, Juneau Votes, KTOO, and the Juneau Empire will host a debate between the local candidates for Alaska State House. Learn about your candidates for House District 33 and 34 ahead of the November 8th election. The debate begins at 5:30 p.m. in the Egan Lecture Hall at the University of Alaska Southeast. KTOO's Matt Miller and the Empire's James Brooks will moderate the debate. Audience members will also be able to ask questions. The Juneau Votes State House candidates debate is at 5:30 p.m. Thursday at the Egan Lecture Hall at UAS.
It's about 58 and a half minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown, and this has been a Juno Afternoon this Tuesday, the 11th of October. Thank you so much for listening. The Juno Police Department will be holding an outcry auction for impounded vehicles, and the viewing begins tomorrow, the 13th, between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. The auction will be this Saturday, the 15th, at 9390 La Perouse Avenue. For more information, contact JPD at 500-0827. And tune in again tomorrow for a Juno Afternoon to hear about things going on here in Alaska's capital city.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.